and yet I'm reluctant to give up on that belief. Any threat to that fact, like a narrow loss, causes me to immediately attempt to prove it in the next moment. Once I'm in a trade, I'm seeking validation of that proficiency, and if I see the flow going against me, I'm doing everything in my power to predict what's going to happen next, despite knowing it's a futile task. But the very reasoning that got me into the trade, when apparently invalidated, is the same reasoning I feel like should get me out. 4. What's the correction? I can only be assured that the trade fits within my system and that it has edge over time. My goal is to have a win rate close to 60% and a 1.75 to 2.5 R factor, not an 80% win rate, which I believe is unrealistic for my style. I can be incredibly successful, but not like that, so I need to let the trades play out. 5. What logic confirms that correction? There's a thorough data set that grounds my strategy. The process has edge over time, but I'm only going to make money on roughly half my trades. Essentially, Joe was commingling daily P&L with long-term profitability, and he was equating P&L with being right. In our work together, I pushed him to become more process-oriented, and that led him to revisit a tracking idea that he'd kicked around but not fully explored. Joe created a sheet with 100 boxes on it, where each box related to an individual trade. Every time he would execute his strategy correctly, he would check off one box and wouldn't even think about the outcome until he had at least 25 in a row. Looking at these 25 completed trades at one time allowed him to more easily see them as a whole portfolio, replicating the process he had with options trading, as opposed to standalone occurrences. This made it a lot easier for him to avoid hyper-focusing on each trade, individually, in the moment, and to reframe his objectives in a more familiar light. Joe knew he had edge, and implementing such a strategy allowed him to let it work itself out over time. Laying out the trades in this way gave him the validation of success that he desired, the feeling of being a winner. And the result showed. His R factor rose to 3. Although to be fair, he noted that the market environment was different during the bulk of our coaching than previously. Yet he estimated that if the environment had remained the same, it would have likely still risen to at least his goal of 1.75R. Joe's work isn't done. While this process-focused strategy has significantly improved his execution and removed some of his emotions, there's more emotion pinging around than is ideal. As this approach becomes more standard, he'll free up mental space to focus on correcting those incremental emotions as aggressively as he corrected his execution around revenge trading. If revenge trading is a problem for you, look closely at the trades that typically trigger the revenge. It's unlikely that every losing trade sets off this reaction. Is it the ones that are more discretionary, where you have less conviction about your strategy, or have more uncertainty about the outcome? Could it be a sign of weakness in your strategy, or technical proficiency? These questions will help you to get to the heart of the anger, as well as the weakness in your confidence. Entitlement tilt. Entitlement tilt happens when something you believe to be rightfully yours has been taken away. The act of winning is akin to possessing something. You now own it, and when losses mount, it's as if the market has robbed you. After losing the first trade you expected to win on the day, you might experience some shock or disbelief. You might even laugh, because you can hardly believe what just happened. But it's not that big of a deal. You know trading is like that. As losses pile up, however, tilt settles in, and you start to lose your mind. At the root of entitlement tilt is an underlying belief that you have the right to win or deserve to win for such reasons as working harder than others, being smarter, or having a longer career. You may say to yourself, I have a great track record and do all the right things. I should be the one getting paid for my effort. Or, I've suffered more than anyone. I deserve to make a killing now. You're incredulous over the idea that you could make less in the same situation as traders with less skill, knowledge, and experience. How did you not score a massive winner when they did? It annoys the heck out of you. In your mind, the implication is that you have earned the right to have whatever it is you believe you deserve. Entitlement is a problem that you may not have realized affects you. Not only can it be subtle, who wants to admit to being entitled? Just the sound of that can be hard to swallow. But once you look more closely at why you're getting so pissed off, you may notice a sense that you deserve to win, or that losing takes away what's rightfully yours. The reality is that everyone has some weakness to work on, and it's better to be honest about yours so you can get past it. You may actually feel relieved by acknowledging this problem and no longer protecting these lies. While anger is the most common signal of entitlement, the problem is really caused by overconfidence. Overconfidence simply means that you have exaggerated or inflated beliefs about your skills or results. In other words, you believe things that aren't true. The idea that your past results, efforts, or suffering have earned you the right to make money is absurd. You know that, of course, but trading can do a good job of feeding those false beliefs. Periods where you make a lot of money not only pad your account, but your confidence as well. You dream of how much money you could make, and a small part of you feels like that money is already yours. This inflated confidence sets you up to tilt when the market takes the profits that you thought were already yours. The anger that shows up is often an attempt to preserve the false confidence. You want to believe you're that good. The question is, why do you need to believe it? To help you answer that question and get to the heart of what's causing your overconfidence, keep going to the next chapter. Chapter 7, Confidence. Confidence is a feeling which reflects the coherence of information and the cognitive ease of processing it. Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow. Right now, there are new traders out there who feel more confident than 20-year veterans. How can this be? The gap in skill between them is immense, and if we were to bet on who was going to make more money in a year, you'd only take the new trader if you were looking to gamble. Their levels of confidence and skill are not aligned. For many of you, the confidence you have in your trading is not an accurate measure of your competence as a trader. If it were, you wouldn't get caught up in a rush of euphoria after closing out a huge trade and then make questionable bets thinking you can't lose. You also wouldn't lose conviction for trades that you're normally certain about during a drawdown. But confidence is an emotion, and just like the other emotions described in this book, it's vulnerable to the influence of flaws and biases. You make decisions based on how confident you feel. When feeling strong, you size up, take on more risk, and trade more. Of course, if you're overconfident, those actions are problematic. Low on confidence, and you're likely to hesitate, cut down on size, lean towards consensus, and look for a new system. For those of you skeptical of the role of confidence in performance, I agree that it has been oversold as something that you need to have to be successful. That's not the case. There's no causal connection between confidence and how much money you'll make. You don't need to feel confident to be a profitable trader. Being confident that you can make money doesn't mean you will, just as lacking confidence doesn't mean you won't. You need to be competent as a trader more than you need to be confident. Regardless of how you feel about your ability, after a large enough sample, your results tell the real story. But confidence does help you navigate the short term, when you don't exactly know what your skills are capable of producing. And having confidence helps you to perform at higher levels compared to when you're lacking it. Confidence is like the oil in an engine that allows the parts to move with less friction. It allows you to make the most of your skills and knowledge as a trader. Just like the oil in a car, however, too much or too little causes problems. You need the right amount to operate at peak efficiency. Many of you will come to this chapter as you come to me for coaching, when your engine is seizing and your confidence is stalled. There's a natural tendency to focus on correcting a lack of confidence when having too much of it could be a bigger problem. Let's look at both more closely. In today's day and age, it might sound strange to suggest too much confidence is a problem, particularly in Western society where confidence has been anointed as the be-all and end-all. The idea that you could have too much of it doesn't jive with that perspective. Remember, however, that confidence is an emotion, and when emotions rise too high, because you're excited, greedy, or euphoric, higher brain functions decrease and mistakes are made. Being overconfident doesn't mean that you're outwardly arrogant, cocky, or a greedy blowhard. Many traders are plagued by overconfidence, but exhibit only subtle signs of it. When there's a feeling of certainty about market direction, especially without having done a complete analysis, that's overconfidence. When you get amped up about how you figured out the market and are going to make a killing, that's overconfidence. It can also manifest as a refusal to admit mistakes or an insistence on being right. On a winning streak, you take trades just for the sake of it, or you don't think leveraging a position means you're adding risk. You cut corners and avoid pre- and post-market routines. Or you may be discounting the role of variance, assuming that if you timed a trade perfectly to make the maximum, it was all you and not luck. From a performance standpoint, being overconfident means that you're overestimating your real competence. Basically, you're operating more in a bubble relative to what's real. On some level, every trader needs a little bit of that. In the short term, you can't precisely know what your edge is, and there's arguably more upside than downside to having a small amount of overconfidence. For example, having an extra bit of confidence helps you execute your strategy in the face of uncertainty, learn from mistakes, and adjust to changes in the market faster. On the other side of the coin, when you lack confidence, it can be easy to say, "I'm not feeling it," and avoid trades you normally take easily. Maybe you start feeling less confident than usual, and slowly it becomes a bigger trend. You're more consistently down, unsure, depressed, or whatever the traits are that you associate with somebody who isn't confident. At a certain point, these traits begin to feel bigger and all-encompassing. You might wonder if there's something wrong with you, or that maybe you're just not cut out for trading. Suddenly it's all doom and gloom. You're stuck and can't get out of it. Or you might end up denying it's a problem and do whatever you can to minimize the idea that you could have a confidence problem. But there's a far more practical way of thinking about it, which is that confidence, as it relates to trading performance, has many dimensions. Think of it more like pieces to a puzzle, rather than a singular thing you either have or don't. In my experience, it's far more common that a couple flawed, incomplete, or missing pieces create a weakness in confidence than for the entire puzzle to be missing. You simply need to isolate each weakness and correct it, much like we've addressed every other issue in the book. In surgical fashion, find the flaw, fix the flaw, and confidence is restored. While some traders tend to struggle with either overconfidence or low confidence, others go through big ups and downs with both. This especially happens when your confidence is based primarily on results. You end up riding the highs and lows of winning and losing like a roller coaster. You become more obsessed about the intraday up and down ticks of your P&L, and your confidence goes along for the ride. The more you make, the more your confidence rises, and the more likely you are to become overconfident. Execution begins to degrade without you realizing it. Variance continues to be on your side, so small mistakes or subtle drops in execution don't get punished. Part of you feels like you're just going to keep making money, and you get so caught up in riding the high that you don't see losses coming. When results suddenly take a nosedive, it's like getting the carpet yanked out from underneath you, and you're face first on the ground with your confidence flattened. You try to talk yourself through it and stay positive. You show up the next day, optimistic and ready to execute. But losing again is deflating, causing you to question what you're doing. The way you can stop these emotional swings from being so dramatic is to develop what I call stable confidence, which means that your confidence is based on something more solid and independent than just results. Stable confidence happens when your perspective is untainted by the flaws that cause instability. You become automatically better able to withstand the chaos of the markets, variance, and things out of your control, so you can adjust your strategy more quickly and accurately. It's like you're anchored to something solid enough to withstand a tornado. Stable confidence enables you to focus much more on your execution than on P&L in the short term. Of course, profitability matters a lot, but emphasizing execution in the short term is how you make more money, or lose less, and learn faster. Nature of confidence. Confidence is the foundation of your mental game because it's the emotion that directly reflects your skill as a trader. Viewing confidence as an emotion may be a novel idea when it seems like something solid that you either have or don't. But think about how you and other traders talk about it. You'll often use the word feel, like I'm feeling confident or I'm not feeling it. Skill is solid and much harder to change. Confidence is fluid and can change in a flash, just like other emotions can. Confidence problems develop as a result of beliefs, flaws, biases, wishes, and illusions that alter your perspective on your skill. That's what the bulk of this chapter will focus on. But first, it's important to highlight that a drop in confidence can be a signal that something is off in any of your individual trading skills. Other, more ancillary skills can also be off. These might include studying or researching, networking and collaborating, and the mental side of being a trader, which includes skills like focus, discipline, work ethic, and emotional control. More experienced traders should first analyze a drop in confidence as a signal of a drop in skill. Maybe you're in a slump and out of sync with the market. The game has changed, but you haven't caught up yet. Or maybe your confidence is down because your ability to execute your strategy is inconsistent. Despite your best efforts, you continue to take marginal trades because you lack the necessary discipline or nuanced skill to navigate discretionary trades. Either way, the drop in confidence is not the problem. It's signaling the real problem to be addressed. When you lose confidence like this, it can easily be misinterpreted as something mental, when the solution will actually come from the technical side of the equation. The drop in confidence is deserved because something is off skill-wise. You just haven't identified it yet. It's better to lose a little confidence, however, than to be overconfident and blindly continue as though nothing was wrong. That's how problems become magnified. The key is not overreacting to the signal by becoming pessimistic or negative and losing more confidence. Traders with stable confidence can remain objective in this spot, knowing they'll eventually figure it out. On the flip side, a surge of confidence can reflect an expansion of your skill set and reaching higher levels of competency. Something has clicked. It almost feels like you're cheating. Your hard work has allowed you to see these trades so clearly that you can't believe it was so hard to see before. From a practical standpoint, this increase in confidence is confirmation that the front end of your inchworm is expanding. But watch out, as this can easily turn into overconfidence when you assume that you've figured it out and you believe that you'll continue to make more money now or that your future goals are assured. Take the rise in confidence as confirmation that your work is paying off and continue your efforts. Don't use it as evidence that you can passively ride the wave or you'll eventually get into trouble. Common signs of overconfidence. Being overconfident is like having your head in the clouds while thinking you're on solid ground. I imagine it like a cartoon character who unknowingly runs off a cliff and is suspended in midair until realizing what's wrong. When you become overconfident, you don't realize that your perception, analysis, and execution have begun to degrade. As they degrade, you become looser with your risk management parameters. Your focus and energy on finding the next idea or adapting your system decreases, and you start to justify getting into a marginal trade. You become more complacent in your decision-making process and put on weaker trade ideas that lack the usual rigor. Overconfidence is often fueled by a big swing in profitability. Perhaps you've had some outsized returns, like your biggest win or your biggest month ever. It can also show up when you start to feel like your understanding of the market or your development as a trader is really clicking. You can overestimate the extent of what you know and start to feel certain about market direction. You become more stubborn and can't admit a mistake, take a loss, or accept advice from more seasoned traders. You assume losses are temporary and that you'll continue to print money. You get overly excited about a trade, and at the height of this euphoria think, this is gonna make me rich, or I figured out the market. For some of you, your head will inflate so much that your sense of superiority will make you criticize other traders or the market as a whole, saying things like, people don't know what the hell they're doing. When you're expecting to make money, it doesn't make much sense to bring the usual focus and energy. You spend less time in front of the charts, or even if you're there, you lack the vigilance compared to your optimal state. Overconfidence can pump you full of adrenaline and make you feel on top of the world, and on the flip side, lead to complacency and taking it easy. As I said in the intro of this chapter, traders experience overconfidence in a wide variety of ways. If you're not showing this emotion outwardly in a big, dramatic way, then you may assume that you're not overconfident. But overconfidence can show up in understated ways too, such as when you are overly convicted on a particular trade, refuse to take profit at your target because you assume you'll make more, are eager to trade but less rigorous in your preparation and execution, quickly make decisions because you feel like you can't lose, justify more risk by saying, this has to go up, want to always have action regardless of the risk, neglect valuable signals and only focus on a few pieces to make a buy or sell decision, impulsively enter or exit trades. Subtle signs of overconfidence were the reason Brendan, a commodities and futures trader from Canada, hadn't solved his problems executing a morning strategy, which resulted in a lower win rate than his afternoon strategy. He would become certain a trade was going in his favor and think, 100%, I can't possibly be wrong here. Then the trade would blow out, but his excess conviction wouldn't allow him to exit. He couldn't admit that he was wrong. This led to big losses, sometimes up to 30% of his account, as well as to revenge trade. Intent on ending every day green, Brendan would force trades and instead too often hit his daily stop loss. This was particularly painful because easier trades would pop up 20 minutes later and he couldn't take them. Brendan also struggled to take profit at his target. Logically, he knew a fight for the absolute top wasn't worth the risk, but a desire for perfection compelled him to fight for every cent. Then after a pullback, swirling thoughts about how much he lost would cause him to start looking for trades rather than letting the trades come to him. The last sign of overconfidence, and to Brendan the most surprising, was in his goal setting. If he made $10,000 in a month, his goal for the following month wasn't to make 10% or 20% more. No, Brendan would look to make $100,000. He didn't realize how much pressure he was putting on himself with this big of an increase. It made him do things like break the rules he'd set for how many trades he could take in the morning. His big goals were setting him up for failure, and he was spinning in circles due to the large drawdowns. When I lay the examples out one after the other like this, it may make these signs of overconfidence seem obvious, but in the midst of the daily grind, they weren't obvious to Brendan. Not until he started digging into these problems did his outsized conviction, desire for perfection, and unrealistic goals become clear. At the heart of all of them, we found two main flaws: believing he could be right on every trade and expecting perfection. Brendan was able to resolve these problems by using the advice in this chapter and the real-time strategy I discuss in Chapter 9. He discovered that he never gave himself credit for any of his successes. The advice that I've included in the perfectionism section was particularly helpful to Brendan, helping him steadily build the muscle, so to speak, of recognizing that he knew what he was doing and was profitable. While it took some time for the new perspective to become second nature, he had the data to see that over a large sample, he's winning at 60%. Now when Brendan takes a loss, he just thinks, this trade is one of the 40%. I'm still playing my game, and in the long run, I make money because I'm following my strategy. At this point, Brendan is much more consistent, both emotionally and in how he trades. He can take losses easily, doesn't force trades, and is able to stay out of harm's way, as he explained it. He's able to immediately get back to watching the market for great opportunities he couldn't capitalize on before. Similarly, the corrections to his desire for perfection allowed him to take profit at his target and accept just catching the meat of the move, not the entire thing. His new perspective allowed him to use the logic that perfectionism had hijacked, that 1 cent is insignificant and not worth the risk to chase it. Taken together, these improvements have made a significant impact on Brendan's bottom line. His win rate has stayed the same, but the big losses that caused carnage to his P&L and emotions are gone, and as a result, his P&L is steadily climbing. Common signs of lack of confidence. Lacking confidence is like getting a car stuck in the mud. Sometimes with a little effort and luck, you can get out quickly. Other times, the more you struggle, the deeper you sink, and the more desperate you become. That's when you floor it looking for a quick escape and end up digging yourself into a deeper hole. Confidence can get stuck like this as a result of some big losses, a sustained drawdown, seeing others making a lot of money while you're not, or continually missing opportunities. Suddenly, it seems like nothing you try works. You get creative, lose more. You try to figure out what's not going well, but you can't come up with an answer. That leads to more doubt and more instability. You force, lose more, you become negative, thinking things like, I suck at this. I can't come up with a single winner. I just keep losing. You take the rest of the day off, but when you see the juicy trades you missed, you lose even more confidence, now related to a weakness in your emotional control or mental game. You don't know why you struggle so much with it, and you assume that no one else does. You question whether you're as good a trader as you thought, and wonder, if I missed a big move like that, how could I be any good? If you're not any good, then what? You can't quit. You've invested too much time. But this is as far as you've gotten. Was it for nothing? Will you fail? For some, this description will hit home. For others, it's too severe. Obviously, there's a lot of variation in what traders are like when they lose confidence. Here are some additional descriptions of what you might be going through. Overly focused on P&L, account balance, or the size of a drawdown in an unproductive way. Uninterested and making excuses not to trade or find opportunities. Wondering if your strategy has stopped working. Difficulty finding new ideas, and unable to trust that what you do come up with will work. Embarrassed and comparing yourself to other traders who are doing better. Beating yourself up for not having what it takes. Thinking you've lost it and can no longer perform up to your prior standard. Discouraged that you're not making progress. Depressed or down about your performance. Feeling like previous success means nothing. Desperately jumping from system to system, looking for something that will work and make money, as if you're looking for the answer to your poor results. While some of these signs you will recognize easily, others are less obvious. The following scenarios are examples you may not immediately associate with having a lack of confidence. Trying to hit home runs. A hidden signal of a lack of confidence is taking an extreme setup that can have a big return, aka trying to hit a home run. Taking a trade like this can arise from a lack of trust, belief, or confidence in your strategy and your ability to consistently create profit. You're looking for a windfall to give you confidence that what you're doing is right. But a trade like this is outside your system. It's akin to gambling. Even if it pays off, You're not getting the right confirmation about your skill set, and you're actually in a weaker position going forward. Sure, at that moment you have more money in your account, but you got lucky, and you know it. That weakens confidence, and when you inevitably lose confidence again, you're more likely to look for a similar type trade. Next time, you might not get so lucky. The attempt to force a home run type trade is a subconscious attempt to make up for prior losses and escape negative thoughts about your trading. A big win means you must be good and would eviscerate any doubts to the contrary. That's not something you're thinking about consciously when you attempt a trade like this, but often traders have a hard time understanding why they take them. On the outside, it looks greedy, and others around you may accuse you of that. But it's important to analyze the problem cleanly. If you have a cluster of other signs that show you're actually struggling with a lack of confidence, look closely at what the real intent of taking a trade like this is. It's likely that you're looking to win a lot of confidence quickly. Quick tip. When you're feeling low in confidence is not the time to overhaul your strategy because you're unlikely to do so correctly. Put extra emphasis on executing your existing strategy. You know it can make money, and you'll be able to start rebuilding your confidence in a more sustainable long-term way. As you start to get back on solid ground again, that's when you can take a look at what you've learned recently and adjust your strategy. Lack of confidence can pull you out of the zone. When you become aware of how incredibly well you're doing, that awareness is a signal that your confidence hasn't grown large enough to support the idea that you could be this good. Your skills and confidence do not match. You're surprised by how much money you've made, the year you've had, the feedback you're getting from other traders, or your own uncanny sense of the market. Your perspective on your own competence is artificially low. This often shows up in traders who struggle after going on a heater or who have the best month of their career. If your confidence was in line with your skills, you wouldn't be surprised by what you accomplished or by what you were able to sense about the market. You don't get surprised by the things that fall in line with what you expect of yourself. You're only surprised by the truly unexpected. If someone rings your doorbell and it's your neighbor, you're not surprised. You may wonder what they want, but it's not out of the realm of possibility for your neighbor to ring your doorbell. If, on the other hand, you answered your door and it was the President of the United States, that would be surprising. If you're truly surprised at your performance, you don't yet believe that you could actually be that good. Quick tip. If you want to build a bigger pyramid, you need to build a bigger base. When you become surprised at how good you're performing or how good you've become, don't try to force your intuition or do anything crazy. Return to your B game and make your base wider by removing technical and mental errors from your C game. Stable confidence. In a sense, you can consider stable confidence as the middle ground between overconfidence and lacking confidence. That doesn't mean you feel neutral, robotic, or numb. In fact, it's quite the opposite. You're full of emotion, but that emotion more accurately reflects your real skill, not misperceptions caused by flaws, biases, or short-term results. Having stable confidence means that your confidence never swings to extremes because of variance or for any other reason. Of course, minor fluctuations occur, since growth and variation in your performance is constant. But there is a degree of solidness that remains. The major flaws, habits, or biases have been corrected. As a result, you're more easily able to perform at a high level, evaluate your strengths and weaknesses, maintain a clear mind even during periods of market chaos, access and trust your intuition, avoid big mistakes, adapt to changes in the market, focus on finding opportunities and executing. Focus only on what's most relevant without getting distracted. Since your level of confidence influences execution, development of trade ideas, adjustments in your strategy, sense of the market, and other decisions around trading, it's important to have your confidence be as stable as possible. For obvious reasons, the goal of this chapter is to help you to build stable confidence. As you resolve the flaws and biases you have about your trading skill, you'll get there automatically. Take David, a retired actor who's been trading bonds, futures, and options part-time for the past 6 years with the intent of making it a full-time gig. When he and I first started our sessions, he was not yet profitable, and confidence issues were part of the problem. Flashes of entitlement and overconfidence would strike when he was doing well. Market movement seemed so easy to understand that he would size up too large and overtrade. On the flip side, when he was losing, confidence would go way down, and thoughts like, "I have no reason to believe that my strategy will ever work again," would lead him to jump to another methodology he thought would be better suited for that market. There was a distrust both in himself and those he was trying to learn from. For the past few years, David had a grass-is-always-greener state of mind, and he leapfrogged from one strategy or instrument to another, based on small samples of data or erratic market conditions. Driven by a life lesson that there was always a better way, he would quickly lose faith in a methodology, even before getting a big enough sample to properly evaluate it. Through our work, he realized that he had to commit to a strategy and focus more on implementation and understanding his rules under changing market conditions. By sticking with it and gathering a larger data sample, he found the limits of his knowledge and owned up to his shortcomings instead of jumping ship, all of which led to greater stability in his confidence. Reducing the loss of confidence was the first step. After that, we needed to tackle the overconfidence. The flaw driving this surge in confidence was essentially the polar opposite to the flaw lowering his confidence. He felt that he had found the strategy that would dump money in his backyard forever. Saying this out loud helped, but he needed a little something more. After getting to know David, I suggested he create a poster that detailed all aspects of his overconfidence. David took that idea to the next level, actually hiring an artist to draw a cartoon caricature of him with details listed from his confidence profile to reference during the trading session. Then whenever he would start to become that cartoon version of entitlement, looking at that picture immediately helped him to gain some perspective and stabilize his confidence. For him, this strategy really made a difference, because for the first time in his quest for emotional discipline, David got to use comedy instead of negativity. This fit with his general worldview that life is funny and often absurd. Recognizing his emotional state as cartoonishly overconfident made the faulty logic behind his emotions easy to challenge. This lighthearted perspective has allowed him to manage the peaks and valleys of trading with stability in his confidence and consistency in his routines. He now trusts his methodology, no more jump and ship, and that has led to consistent growth in his account. Mapping your confidence. Recognizing the signals that confidence is rising too high or falling too low allows you to quickly contain and minimize the damage to your execution. Going through the process of mapping those signals is essential to being able to recognize in real time when your confidence has become unstable so that you can quickly regain stability. Plus, it also provides insight into the flaws causing your confidence to fluctuate and the sections of this chapter you need to emphasize. Follow the steps below to help you create an actual document that maps your confidence. Step 1. Unlike the prior three chapters, you're not just going to focus on recognizing the signals of a problem. You're going to start out by mapping what stable or optimal confidence looks like for you. This gives you a target to aim for and makes it easier to identify when confidence has risen too high or fallen too low. Even if you don't experience it very often, every one of you has a version of stable confidence that's unique to you. Write down a short description of what it looks like. Here are some questions to get you started. What does it feel like when your confidence is balanced, neither too high nor too low? What is your decision-making process like? Describe the quality of your focus. Describe your energy level. Do you feel calm, fired up, or somewhere in between? Are you in the zone? Does your mind seem clear? Does your sense of time speed up or slow down? Take notes after each instance when you have stable confidence. Build your understanding of what it looks like until your notes become repetitive and it's clear there's nothing more for you to add. If you're currently in a period where you're struggling and your confidence is low or too high, you may find this step hard. Do the best you can now, and then add more details the next time your confidence is stable. Step 2. In addition to describing stable confidence, pay close attention to the fluctuations in your confidence. Do you tend to predominantly become overconfident or lose confidence? Or do you cycle back and forth from one to the other? Examine and capture what causes your confidence to go up and down. Be specific about signs of overconfidence and/or a lack of confidence, including thoughts, emotions, things you say out loud, behaviors, actions, changes to your decision-making, changes to your perception of the market, opportunities, or current positions, trading mistakes. Even when your confidence is low, I encourage you to look for subtle signs of overconfidence too, such as having excessive conviction, being too certain about the future, or being overly complacent. Keep a document open on your computer or a notepad next to you while you trade and take notes. At the end of the trading day, review what you found and add additional details. Be as comprehensive as you can. Mapping is an iterative process. you're not going to identify all of the details perfectly at first. Keep an eye out for new details and be sure to add them. Small details matter and can make the difference when you have an opportunity to improve execution. If this is hard at the beginning, don't worry about it. Everyone has their own starting point. Use what you find and build on it over time. As long as you keep it in your mind, you'll continually learn more than you knew before. Progress is progress regardless of the speed. Here are some questions to get you started. Low confidence. What situations typically cause you to lose confidence? For example, losing faith in your strategy, seeing other traders make money, or finding it hard to come up with new ideas? How does your body react when you're low in confidence? Do you move more slowly or slouch in your chair? Can you describe the point where confidence drops too low and becomes a problem? What specifically is going through your mind? What thoughts do you have? How is your decision-making process different? Overconfident. What situations typically cause you to feel overconfident? For example, big winning trade, getting a lot of praise, or being ahead of your goal for the month. How does your body react when you're feeling overconfident? Are you restless and can't sit still, amped up, or aware of adrenaline pulsing through your veins? Can you describe the point where confidence becomes excessive and turns into a problem? What specifically is going through your mind? What thoughts do you have? How is your decision-making process different? If you also go through periods of low confidence, is that drop preceded by overconfidence? Frequently, traders have a tendency towards one or the other, overconfidence or a lack of confidence. But you may have to go through a few cycles of results being up and down to get a clean map. Some of the triggers for the swings in confidence may not happen that often, so you may not get a perfect map for a lot longer than would be ideal. That places a greater emphasis on spotting the smaller fluctuations or triggers because they're typically still related to the larger ones. Step 3. Once you've gathered a lot of details, organize what you found by scaling them. Due to the unique nature of confidence, there are a few ways you can do this. If you tend to only lack confidence, you could set ideal confidence at 10, with 1 as your lowest level. If you tend towards overconfidence, you might do the opposite, where 1 is your ideal level, and 10 describes you at your most overconfident. Finally, if you tend to cycle between the two, you can do one for each or combine them by making 5 your ideal level of confidence, levels 1 to 4 reflecting a lack of confidence, and 6 to 10 highlighting overconfidence. However you organize your levels, at each one be sure to identify details that clearly distinguish it from another level. As you assign levels of severity, also split them into 2 categories, the mental and emotional side of confidence and the technical side. They sit side by side. So for example, level 1 on the mental and emotional side corresponds to level 1 on the technical side, and so on. The example below illustrates a scale that puts 5 in the middle as the ideal level of confidence, with 1 to 4 reflecting lack of confidence, and 6 to 10 reflecting overconfidence. Confidence level. Describe the thoughts, emotions, things you say, behaviors, and actions that highlight each level of confidence. Complete at least 3 levels. 10. Feeling invincible, euphoric, thinking about what I'll do with all the money I'm going to make. 8. Everything I do is right, not thinking about potential for losses. Amped up and feel blood coursing through me. 6. Expect the next trade to hit, excited. 5. Confident and calm, no extra thoughts. Certain on what I'm looking for, able to trust my intuition. Losses barely register. 4. Pessimistic, assuming open positions will lose. 2. Self-critical and discouraged. Question the viability of my strategy. Feel like I want to give up, but I'm still fighting. 1. Not in my stomach. Can't see how I can make money. Technical level. Describe the quality of your decision-making, perception of the market, opportunities or current positions at each level of confidence. 10. Get even more aggressive with targets, certain they'll hit. 8. Take bigger position sizes. Harder time letting go of trades and adhering to stops. Take more trades than normal. 6. Making faster decisions and taking on more risk than ideal. 5. Easily stick to my game plan while sensing what the market is giving me and adapting to it. 4. A bit hesitant, but still executing well. 2. Looking for perfect trades so I don't take many. Overly worried about a reversal when I do. 1. Stop trading. With that, you have a solid draft that you can use while you're trading to recognize your pattern and quickly respond with the correction. Since these patterns can take a lot of work to correct, don't revise your map until you get consistent evidence that it has permanently changed. Now use what you've identified in this section to focus on the specific causes of instability in your confidence most relevant to your trading. I strongly advise that you read through all of them because you may identify issues that you didn't realize you had at first glance, and you may think of additional details to add to your map. Correcting cognitive illusions and biases. As I've mentioned before, there are some people who believe cognitive biases can't be changed and that your only defense is to learn about them so you can avoid them. However, biases can be changed when you correct the faulty reasoning behind them. The first step is to identify the ones that affect you, and then dig in to see what's feeding the illusion or bias. There are many biases and illusions that affect traders. You can do an online search and find hundreds of them, such as the gambler's fallacy, where your sense of probability is altered, and the recency effect, where you overweight the relevance of information that you've heard recently. This section focuses on the biases that most commonly cause instability and impact the confidence of traders. You might find others that affect you personally, and by all means, use my system to break down and address them. Illusion of control. Having control is fundamental to our existence as people, not just as traders. We constantly strive to increase our ability to control our lives, and the same is true as traders. But problems arise when there are elements of trading, the market, or your mental game that you believe are within your control when they're not. For example, price action, opportunities to make money, and tilt before having worked on it. Too often traders assume they're in more control of these elements than they are, and that further impacts confidence. In the short term, it's hard to know for certain the limits of our control. It's in this uncertainty where illusions thrive. Believing you're in more control of your trading or mental game than you really are is the primary reason for instability in your confidence. Here are 7 common causes. 1. Belief that you can make money in every trade. There's a distinct difference between wanting to make money from every trade and believing or expecting that every trade should be profitable. This belief gets reinforced when you're running hot, fueling overconfidence. Then as your results turn negative, you force trades in an attempt to make even more money. In the beginning of a drawdown, some traders will remain defiant and overconfident, generating more mistakes and losses. Others crack, and the belief that used to provide confidence is shattered. The downward mental slide turns into a free fall. After moments like this, when confidence is shattered, traders look to put the pieces back together and rebuild the confidence they had before. But when your confidence was based in part on an illusion, your aim needs to be to rebuild confidence in a new way. On the surface, it's the idea that you can make money from every trade. No trader can possess that kind of control in the market or their results, and you know that. So why then does the idea hang around in the recesses of your mind? There must be a deeper reason why part of you believes that it's possible or wishes that it could be. Perhaps you have a desire to prove yourself or a belief that you're special. Or perhaps, as you'll see in this example of a mental hand history, it comes from a desire to be perfect. 1. What's the problem? It's so hard to accept when I have down days, and I force trades, average down, and move my profit targets to be profitable every day. 2. Why does the problem exist? I want to make money every day. I have the skills to make 5 to 10 times more than what I'm making now. To me, that's perfection, and that's what I'm capable of. 3. What is flawed? I can make 5 to 10 times what I'm making now and have days where I lose money. That's not my problem right now. My problem is that I lose my mind and disregard a strategy that I know works, trying to be perfect. 4. What's the correction? Perfection doesn't mean profiting every day. If I'm going to try to be perfect, I should focus on perfect decisions, knowing full well that I'm unlikely to reach it, but driven to try. 5. What logic confirms that correction? I can't control the market or my results in the short term. So even if I were perfect in my execution, I would lose, often. But I'll lose a lot less focusing on making the decisions within my system. Make sure the correction to this illusion is at the forefront of your mind. Start the day by reinforcing the limits of your control and where your control lies, your your preparation, execution, focus, etc. This trains your mind to focus more on what you can control and less on what you can't. 2. Illusion of emotional control. Traders who haven't yet worked extensively on their mental game often have an inflated sense of the degree to which they can control their emotions. Simply put, you expect to always be in control, regardless of how intense your emotions are. You don't consider the brain's ability to shut down higher brain functions when emotions become overactive. When this happens, you can't control your emotions as well, because the part of the brain responsible for emotional control has stopped working. Consequently, you lose confidence when failing to prevent yourself from making greedy, risk-averse, or tilted trades. The assumption is that you should know better, and that they should be easy to avoid. It's inexplicable why you couldn't stop yourself. There must be something wrong with you, but you can't determine what it is, so confidence drops. This illusion of control is such a problem that I often warn clients that once they've gained knowledge and recognition, they'll mistakenly believe they can control their emotions. Despite the warning, the problem still crops up because of the hidden belief that they should always be able to control their emotions. Burn this into your brain. Recognition does not equal control. The good news is that the answer to this is quite simple, but for some it may require a lot of repetition. Deep down, you believe that controlling your emotions should happen as easily as breathing. That means you're trying to correct a larger myth, that you can magically control your emotions. It's not magic. Instead, you build that competency when you firmly understand how the brain functions and how to truly correct your emotional reactions, something I'll discuss more in Chapter 9. Be really honest about how weak that skill is, and understand and accept that it will take some work, time, and effort to get right. 3. Predicting outcomes. The mind is always trying to predict the future. However, problems arise when you start to believe your predictions will definitely happen. For example, when you're in a drawdown and assume it will never end, or when you're running hot and you feel like it's only a matter of time before you're driving the Lamborghini you've always wanted. You may also find yourself making more subtle predictions at times, such as thinking, "Today is my day." You start the day excited and eager to battle the market, and this excessive certainty helps you manage small losses or wins. But if your results become outsized in either direction, your ability to maintain discipline and manage your reactions may be compromised by the overconfidence that started your day. Conversely, when you're thinking negatively about the future, it wears on you. You assume that today isn't your day and you won't make money. You check out mentally, lose focus, put in less effort, miss trades, and undersize the good ones. You say things like, "I'm not feeling it," and stop trading to avoid losing. You're lacking confidence simply because you believe your negative prediction is accurate. Both scenarios are caused by the illusion that what's happening now will continue indefinitely. In your mind, it's as if you press the repeat button, and today's reality will just continue to play out in the same way in the future. A great run or a drawdown is assumed to continue, and that causes an excessive rise or fall in your confidence. This in turn affects your preparation, execution, and ability to respond when problems hit. I've talked in the prior two chapters about this problem contributing to anger and fear. If you haven't made as much progress in correcting those issues as you would like, it may be because the issue is more rooted in confidence than pure fear or anger. The correction of this problem comes by firmly understanding that your predictions are not certainties, they're estimates. You're not considering a range of possible outcomes and assigning probabilities to their likelihood. Instead, you're convinced that you're going to make money on a trade, lose money for the day, get stopped out, or hit your profit target on the trade even when you're only 75% there. You feel justified in these predictions because they feel like they're going to happen. And that's how you know there's an illusion at play. Your job isn't to know what's going to happen. You manage the inherent unpredictability in the market by making probabilistic bets within a system. Recognizing the feeling of excessive certainty, whether it's positive or negative, is a big part of how you correct this illusion and develop stable confidence. Write down a list of things you think or say when your conviction is excessive and when it's optimal. This will help you to distinguish the difference in real time, so you can dial down your degree of certainty in spots where you actually don't have it. You may also need to dig deeper and use the mental hand history to understand why you need that excessive certainty. What's the weakness in your confidence that forces you to make assumptions about the future? For example, excessive certainty could come from a desire to mask weaknesses in your decision-making process. Perhaps it's not as robust as it should be because you're half-assing the process. Attempts to emulate the confidence that you see in other traders you respect and aspire to be like. A wish that you could know what's going to happen. Obviously, you'd make quite a lot of money that way. Getting to the root of what drives your need for excessive certainty is key to being able to consistently treat your predictions as predictions, not as fact. You know that's how it should be, but you have to do the work to get there. 4. Ignoring the influence of variance. Some traders think in the short term that they're in full control of their results. They revel in profits that aren't entirely their doing, and they berate themselves over losses they didn't cause. Variance is tricky, making it difficult to distinguish the degree to which your P&L is a result of your edge. But traders who struggle with this illusion of control neglect to actively develop a skill that can stabilize their confidence and emotional reactions to their results, the skill to recognize variance. Your first reaction after reading this may be to assume that your ability to recognize variance can improve. But think about your ability to spot variance now compared to your first year. Even though it still may be weak relative to what would be optimal, you've improved. Now imagine if you worked on it directly. At a minimum, it will help you to reduce overreactions due to variance in either direction. Here's how. Before looking at your P&L for the session, make note of the trades where you suspect variance was a larger factor, and estimate the degree to which it impacted your results. Then gauge your performance or level of execution and estimate your P&L for the day. Finally, compare it to your actual results. Following these steps will give you a different feeling. If you were unhappy with your execution but had higher profit than normal, you should feel less positive and more concerned with how to execute better. On the flip side, if you lost money but were happy with the trades you took, you should feel less negative than normal. The value here is not to attain perfect accuracy. It's getting you to account for variance in a more deliberate way so you can view your results more objectively. What if you already know this, account for it, but still can't help but get caught up in the wave of blaming yourself for losses and or getting too high for the wins? Then you know it's not really about variance, and it's connected to one of the other confidence issues discussed in this chapter. 5. Unrealized potential. This problem is more commonly found among aspiring traders than veterans. You deeply believe in your potential and envision yourself being successful, maybe hugely so. You're highly motivated to prove yourself and realize that potential. Your belief is so deep that you can actually feel the success you envision as if you already achieved it. Confidence artificially rises because imagined results produce positive emotions, even though they could take a long time to attain. It's as if your confidence is already priced in those results. Not surprisingly, like an inflated market, it doesn't take much for your confidence to crash. It's fragile, and even a standard losing day is enough to expose the illusion. It's easy to get caught up in enjoying the confidence and inspiration that comes from being excited about your potential, which makes this flaw easy to miss. You don't see the harm because the consequences aren't immediate. You enjoy the feeling of success, unaware that it creates instability in your confidence. For instance, normal risk calculations are based on the size of your book today. When you suffer from this illusion, however, you could get ahead of yourself and take on more risk because you just assume growth in your account is inevitable. When you revel in your own future success, you also make losses more painful. Why? Because now a loss feels like something is being taken away from you, even though in reality you haven't earned it yet. You must understand the importance of balancing a strong belief in your potential with appreciation for all the steps required to realize it. The more you embrace those steps, the easier it is to keep yourself from enjoying future success prematurely. Be both aspirational and realistic. Dial back your level of certainty about the future, and keep working until you have the results, knowledge, and experience to realize the success you envisioned. 6. Handling feedback. You can't control what people think of you, just as they can't control what you think of them. But it's easy to overreact when being praised or criticized. Pay close attention to the way you're overly influenced by those comments, as it highlights the weakness in your confidence. For example, some of my professional golf clients were standout juniors who received heaps of praise from those around them. "You're going to be on tour competing with Tiger," people would say. After a bad tournament, however, those same people would pepper them with questions, inquiring what went wrong. The players felt like they needed to defend themselves and prove that they played pretty well, even though that wasn't reflected in their scores. You may similarly feel a need to defend yourself against questions that come after some losses. The key is to assess the legitimacy and the competence of the person making the comment. As junior golfers, my clients didn't yet possess the sophistication to understand they needed to be skeptical of even the praise they received. It often came from uneducated sources. A part of their confidence needed that praise and loved the idea that other people thought so highly of their game. But the reality is that no one could say for sure whether they were going to make it on the PGA Tour. Just like no one can say for sure that you'll be a successful trader long term. If there's a part of you that needs assurance and praise from others, you risk those comments artificially raising your expectations and causing overconfidence. On the flip side, negative comments can prey on that need for approval and cause you to be defensive, more doubtful about your prospects, or defiant and motivated to prove them wrong. External feedback, both positive and negative, should ideally represent only a small portion of your overall confidence. Otherwise, your mentality, emotional state, and execution is overly dependent on others. You give up control. Recognize the times where you defend yourself or revel in praise as signals of a weakness in your confidence. 7. Expecting to always be at your best. Being at your best mentally requires that you have full command of the variables that cause your energy, emotions, and mental state to fluctuate. The traders who are able to frequently perform at their best operate from a base of stable confidence. They don't expect to be at that level. They do the work necessary to reach it. In contrast, you just blindly expect to be at your best, and that's a cause of instability in your confidence. Remember back to Chapter 3, where you learned from the inchworm concept that your C game, or your worst, is the only part of your skill set that you can truly expect? Everything else is in the process of being learned and requires effort and attention to attain. You can't control your A game. When you expect to be at your best, you signal to your brain not to focus on the skills currently being learned. You believe your A game is automatic, so you presume to have full command of the variables that produce it. Ironically, by expecting to be consistently at your best, it's practically guaranteed that you won't be. Expect your worst and drive hard to be at your best. An extreme version of the illusion of control that many newer traders have and that's important to correct is highlighted by Goro, a client from Japan who started trading cryptocurrencies early in 2017. At that time, he was still working full-time as an engineer, but by the end of that year, he would quit his day job to trade full-time. Soon after he started trading, however, Goro began to feel tremendous pressure. The crypto market was bullish at that time. He made money in his first trade, and soon after, he was making a lot more than he was from his full-time engineering job. He started thinking he could quit and easily make six figures just by working an hour a day. But the market was volatile and had several major corrections that this novice couldn't handle, tactically or mentally. The tension was exacerbated by the fact that his wife was pregnant with their first child, and they were at the time living in the U.S. with no friends or family for support. He became obsessively focused on the crypto markets, and he wasn't sleeping well because he'd get alerts throughout the night. This strained his marriage, because not only was he not there for his wife during her pregnancy and in the months that followed his son's arrival, but he started losing money on top of it. Goro felt like he was failing his family, and it was at that low point when he and I began working together. In the first several sessions, we found that at the root of Goro's issues were the illusions that he could make easy money, make money from every trade, and always be at his best. One day we discussed whether he would rather be the luckiest trader in the world or the most skilled, and he immediately replied that he would rather be lucky. That was the turning point, and this mental hand history helped him to clearly see the problem. 1. What's the problem? I want to have superhuman power that will allow me to maximize profit and eliminate loss from every trade in an extremely unrealistic way. 2. Why does the problem exist? I've had this illusion for a long time that it was possible to have superhuman abilities, and deep down I must think it's possible. 3. What is flawed? I have 25 years of life experience to prove that it's not possible to have such power, and if I continue to think this way, I'm basically a 7-year-old. Look at the chaos this one belief is causing in my life. I'm essentially thinking that I can win the lottery. What if I win it? Will I have anything left other than money? If I don't win, then I'll have neither. 4. What's the correction? Since I don't have superhuman power, the only thing I can do is to do the work necessary to become a skilled trader and accept that no matter how good I become, I can't always be at my best and that not all trades will be profitable. 5. What logic confirms that correction? This is the only way to achieve financial freedom through trading. Unless I want to be a lucky fish who wins the lottery, I need to correct this illusion or risk ruining my life. From that point, Goro started to treat trading with the seriousness required. 3 years later, as I write this, he continues to trade crypto as well as other markets. Emotionally, he's graduated from the deeper illusions to more practical problems that I typically see with veteran traders. FOMO and anger pop up from time to time with some flashes of overconfidence. Goro estimates that his emotional volatility has decreased by probably 75% since we first began working together. The 25% that remains, he's very aware of when it happens and knows how to correct it. For example, as soon as he thinks, "I'm a genius," he makes certain to stick to the plan and looks for a good opportunity to take profit or close the trade. Illusion of learning. If you previously were unfamiliar with the inchworm concept, you may have developed errors in your belief about learning. These flaws cause emotional volatility, including confidence problems. You falsely assume things about your development as a trader, creating confusion and pessimism. Or conversely, you get ahead of yourself too easily and think aspects of your skill set have already been mastered when they haven't yet. Correcting these errors is necessary to develop stable confidence. Additionally, here are some of the more common illusions of learning that impact confidence. 1. Premature mastery. When on a good run, it's easy to be fooled into thinking that aspects of your skill set that are currently being learned have actually already been mastered. This mistake essentially means you think you have crossed the finish line when you haven't yet. Like being at mile 21 of a marathon. Close, but you're not there yet. Perhaps you've been in a good emotional state for several weeks, making some money, and you've relaxed a bit, assuming your tilt is handled. Then tilt pops back up unexpectedly, because you stopped actively thinking about the corrections to your tilt. A couple of losses triggered tilt, your mind malfunctioned, and you made a bunch of mistakes. In the aftermath, it's easy to lose confidence, both in your ability to control tilt and the strategy to correct it, even though the actual problem was getting ahead of yourself. The same thing happens when you make trading mistakes you thought were no longer an issue, and you start to question your competency as a trader. When you reach this stage of the learning process, you feel in such command that it seems like you've mastered it. However, reverting back to incompetence at any time and for any reason is proof that skill is still in the process of being learned and requires more work before being fully mastered. Prior to this book, you didn't have a theory or structure to understand why these mistakes were happening. You got ahead of yourself because you didn't know any better. One thing that can help you to avoid this problem is understanding the signals that indicate when you've achieved mastery. A critical marker is consistent preservation of your competence under intense situations where you might have previously hesitated, tilted, been fearful, greedy, or emotionally volatile. Another signal is the complete absence of these mistakes within your B game, whereas before you still had the thought or impulse to tilt or force a trade. Until you've gotten those indications, keep running the race. Those mistakes are still possible. And if you do make one, be a detective. Curious as to why you made them, and get aggressive at fixing them. However, if you can't stop yourself from assuming you've achieved mastery prematurely, there may be a part of you that's desperate for success. As a result, you latch onto any indicator that you're going to be great, will be able to quit your job and trade full-time, or make a ton of money. You're compelled to get ahead of yourself because you're so desperate to attain your goals. Desperation is a topic I talk about later in this chapter, so be sure to read it. 2. Assume that you're smarter than others. Like athletes who assume their athletic talent is greater than others, traders with this bias assume they're smarter than others to bolster their confidence. It's a subtle issue, and a bigger problem for traders who are more competitive with other traders than with themselves. If you're the type to constantly look over your shoulder to see where you rank within the firm, or even within a trading group, you're likely jockeying not just for profits and dominance monetarily, but for proof that you're smarter. You may say things about other traders like, "This guy's an idiot. I can't believe he made that much last year." When you miss opportunities others capitalize on, or losses pile up, you're quick to make excuses. Taking the blame would be an admission that you aren't the smartest in the room, and you can't allow your confidence to take a hit. The main cause of this is a fixed view of intelligence, which comes from an old school mentality that you're either smart or not. When profit is how you prove intelligence, your confidence ends up rising and falling based on the movement of your P&L. You feel like you're only as good as your last trade. There's no lasting permanence to it. Some traders feel this movement more dramatically, while others deny there's a problem, become defiant, or become arrogant to prevent their fragile confidence from dropping. Changing your view of intelligence is important because it's harming your ability to compete with other traders. you end up underutilizing your capacity. You're not learning from losses and mistakes, or at least not efficiently. You're more focused on preserving your position as the smartest, rather than understanding that intelligence is a tool that helps you to execute and learn.